Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today we are turning our focus back to the U.S. energy industry, and we will explore the prospects for consolidation within and whether the current environment is supportive for such activity. So I just want to take a moment to introduce who is joining us on the podcast for today. We do have with us Nikki Decker. Nikki is the energy analyst for the Americas, as well as Jay Dobson, the utilities and energy infrastructure analyst for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Nikki and Jay, it's great to be with you both as always. Welcome back and looking forward to our conversation today.
Morning, Dan.
Morning, Dan. Thanks.
So, Nikki and Jay, it might be helpful for our listeners as a starting point if you can walk us through what the current state of the U.S. oil and gas industry looks like, and that also accounts for the MLP midstream space. So what can you share with us there?
I'll begin, Dan, with a view on the macro front. We're currently seeing very challenging fundamentals for the global oil markets. And, of course, this centers around the collapse in global oil demand and subsequent oversupply. This has pushed oil prices to very low levels. They have recovered somewhat off of their lowest levels. But, you know, even with current oil price levels, we have West Texas Intermediate currently in the low 40s. This continues to pose challenges and, frankly, financial hardship for a number of U.S. oil and gas operators right across the value chain. So, you know, we're just getting through the second quarter earnings season, and, you know, the results have really cast a spotlight on the difficulties. We've seen balance sheet degradation almost without exception. Nobody has gotten through this unscathed. And, you know, we are seeing some recovery in oil market fundamentals, but that recovery, you know, while ongoing, the progress has slowed, and it's been a little bumpy. And so U.S. Oil and gas operators had to act out of necessity aggressively to adjust. That means slashing spending budgets, reducing costs, and some producers have shut in unprofitable wells to mitigate the impact and to help preserve their balance sheets. But, you know, the result being, you know, some just continue to struggle along even with these adjustments, while others, you know, these adjustments have been sort of adequate to mitigate and actually, you know, put them in a position to sort of survive in the current oil price environment. So, Jay, did you want to add any thoughts to that?
Yeah, Nikki, I mean, the reality is the midstream space is very similar to Nikki's comments on the upstream. You know, keep in mind it's a challenging environment for the midstream because they're future or fortunes are tied to the upstream. These are pipelines and storage facilities and processing facilities that serve the upstream oil and gas producers under term contract. So when activity slows, there is an impact on cash flow, and this has been a challenging environment. I'd say the midstream companies have, as Nikki pointed out for the upstream, they've acted aggressively and reacted aggressively, cutting costs. And in doing so, reducing distributions in certain cases. But I'd say as we look forward, you know, upstream activity is going to dictate what happens to cash flow in the midstream, and the uncertain pace of recovery, as Nikki was pointing out, in the near term is going to be a headwind for the sector. So I'd say by and large, you know, midstream remains, you know, pretty challenged right now, and second quarter earnings sort of bore that out.
Thank you, Nikki and Jay. That was a very helpful overview of the current state of the U.S. oil and gas industry to start off our conversation. There are a couple of points I do want to follow up on. Nikki, you did mention a few moments ago financial hardships being experienced within the industry at the moment. Can you expand a bit more on what you're seeing? And also, there seems to be, Nikki, an abundance of operators. Are the business models of these firms in a position to endure the kind of volatility we have witnessed in oil prices recently?
Yeah, you know, Dan, I like to say U.S. operators were born in the 90s. And I don't mean they're millennials. I mean they were born around a $90 a barrel oil. So remember, the shale oil production in the U.S. began about 10 years ago, and that was incentivized and funded by West Texas intermediate prices averaging in the mid-90s, and that lasted right through the middle of 2015. Now, during that five-year period, we did see a lot of IPOs, and these were companies whose business models and cost structures were built around that oil price environment, with a presumption, as we as humans tend to do, that the present was sort of going to be the normal going forward. You know, this caused the U.S. oil industry to transition from being a sleepy, mature industry to a growth industry, and investors love that. The rapid growth that we saw among these newer operators especially, that required a cash flow overspend. And reliance upon the capital markets to help fund the gap. And that in part because of the high cost of shale production, which was, more so then than now, but it was extremely inefficient, it was brand new technology. And this helps, as we fast forward to today, explain the large number of U.S. operators with unsustainably high cost structures, debt-laden balance sheets, with West Texas Intermediate in the low 40s, U.S. operators are unable to generate sufficient cash flow. Their distressed balance sheets lack capacity for more debt. So we have seen a pickup, for instance, in Chapter 11 filings this spring. So a very, very difficult operating environment with oil prices where they are today.
To that point, just given the current state of these balance sheets and the volatility within oil prices that we've been witnessing as of late, Jay, would you say that the current environment that we're in, is it even supportive for consolidation within the industry? And to take it a step further from your vantage point, Jay, would investors even be receptive to industry consolidation at this time?
Yeah, Dan, it's a really good question. And, let me answer it right up front and then sort of peel back the onion a little. But I do think it's supportive for consolidation, and I do think investors would be very receptive to that. The big question is, will it actually occur, in spite of both of those elements? I think when you look at the current conditions that Nikki was talking about and that I mentioned in the midstream, the difficult conditions have sort of ripened the environment for consolidation. And it's important to keep in mind, though all of us are very focused on the current environment, we've been in a difficult, maybe volatile commodity price environment for, the last 5 or 6 years. And you've seen, essentially a chronic oversupplied market that has challenged a lot of companies. So I think the environment right now, sort of sets you up reasonably well for consolidation where, as Nikki and I both mentioned, companies are taking aggressive action to, reduce cost structures, to, gain economies of scale, to essentially fix balance sheets. And I think really when you mix that together, companies are going to be prone to, look at consolidation. There's always the normal tensions of bid-ask spreads and who wants to sell or merge at what price. But, you know, certainly the one thing you can say about this business is there's economies of scale and operating efficiencies at scale that really can't be achieved at smaller sizes. So I think it's going to be an interesting environment. I do think investors are very focused on those economies of scale, as well as with, you know, lower capital budgets, where cash flow is going to be going, either in dividends or distributions or share buybacks. So I think when you mix it all together, it is an environment that's supportive for consolidation. And I believe investors would be very receptive to consolidation. I just don't think at the end of the day this happens sort of just because those two elements are here, and we'll have to see how it plays out. But it is certainly a conducive environment for it, and I do think investors would be receptive.
With that all in mind, so a conducive environment coupled with the investor reception, Nikki, would you say that consolidation is pretty much inevitable at this point? And what exactly needs to happen before we begin to see more of it?
Yeah, on the second question, and Jay alluded to it, it's the wide bid-ask. Fred and Dan, you know, sellers have been unwilling to sell at sub-mid-cycle oil prices, and buyers have been unwilling to pay for assets that offer little, if any, economic value at current oil prices. And that's, you know, I mean, on both sides, I guess you could argue, have valid viewpoints. So, is consolidation inevitable? Well, you know, we've pointed out that the current environment is not sustainable for many. And this, you know, may force some difficult decision-making at this time, capitulation, if you will. And, you know, of course, the big decision is Chapter 11. And debt restructurings or consolidation. And I, you know, I think it's only a matter of time, because, you know, we do, think that oil prices could sort of linger, below mid-cycle, for several, more quarters. So our view is, you know, for investors in equities of some of these, call it more challenged operators, you know, consolidation might be the better outcome, the better decision if being made in their best interest. So what needs to happen? Well, you know, the bid-ask spread needs to narrow. You know, potential buyers are still hesitant to pay prices that assume oil price recovery to mid-cycle, especially in light of all the current uncertainties in the oil markets. And again, nobody is skating through this environment.
Even
the best and the strongest operators, you know, the potential consolidators have had to move, you know, pretty aggressively to preserve the health of their own balance sheet. So, you know, a value-enhancing acquisition, ones that are in the best interests of their own shareholders, you know, are really hard to come by, especially in consideration of the debt that they might need to assume from the seller, as well as assets that are perhaps, you know, inferior in quality to their own assets. So, you know, sellers need to make a concession, you know, potentially selling at a low or no premium valuation, with the idea that their assets being placed on a more efficient platform will over time enhance the value of their assets to the benefit of their shareholders. You know, anecdotally, this is starting to happen. You know, the event that prompted us to sort of open discussion on mergers and acquisitions is, was the corporate acquisition, that a major oil company announced a couple of weeks ago, acquiring a large E&P company for an attractive price and a low premium. And the deal was well received. But again, you know, we think that the current environment is not particularly conducive to a wave of consolidation because of the concessions that need to be made. But, you know, it's always a matter of concessions and negotiations. But, you know, it is a viable option for some. And, you know, it's going to be case by case, if you will. Maybe as the path to mid-cycle oil prices becomes clearer, we'll see buyers' appetite, you know, starting to pick up a little bit, just a little bit more confidence in, you know, a mid-cycle oil price for assumption. But for now, you know, we're not really tempted to build an investment case based on a consolidation theme within the industry.
To expand on that a bit further, as this consolidation story plays out and evolves over time, speaking in terms of today, is this story one, Jay, that investors can or should position for? How should investors think about positioning at this time?
Yeah, Dan, it's really the ultimate question in energy right now, and I think Nikki and I have been really consistent on this point, and that is you really want to own quality. You know, as Nikki pointed out, this has been a really difficult environment. So, you know, who performs best on a relative basis in this environment? It's companies with stronger balance sheets, with very low cost structures, with very good economies of scale. You want those companies because those are going to be the companies likely to make some of these acquisitions. It's going to be the larger companies that can apply economies of scale and take you know, sort of over these, you know, more difficult companies that are, you know, struggling in this current environment. But I think you want to own quality. I think specific to your question around, you know, do you try and play, quote unquote, this, you know, theme of consolidation? I have to admit, over, you know, doing this a couple of decades, I always find when you start to want to play a consolidation theme, a lot of times you end up owning companies you'd rather not own. So what I like about, you know, Nikki and my approach here is if we own quality, so we're focused on companies that actually will get to the other side here with, you know, strong balance sheets and economies of scale, opportunities, I think then you're also buying the companies that are the likely consolidators. And, you know, in an environment, as Nikki pointed out, where, you know, many of these deals will be, you know, no or low premium, and I think there's a lot of value if the deal's structured properly that would, you know, essentially accrue to both the buyer and the seller. So I think there's opportunities here. To Nikki's point, we'll see how much consolidation really occurs despite, you know, some of these elements lining up in favor of it. But I think from an energy investment strategy, you want to own high quality names that have the balance sheet and quite frankly will do well whether consolidation occurs or does not.
Well, Jay and Nikki, it's a very interesting story and one that we will indeed follow up on over the course of time. But thank you for joining us on the Top of the Morning podcast today to walk us through what the current state of the U.S. energy and midstream industries looks like, the prospects for consolidation within, how that story might play out over time, and for U.S. energy investors, how to think about positioning given the current environment. So terrific conversation as always, and we'll look forward to picking it up again with you soon.
Always a pleasure, Dan. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Nikki. Thank you, Jay. And again, today we have been joined by Nikki Decker. Nikki is the energy analyst for the Americas, as well as Jay Dobson, the utilities and energy infrastructure analyst for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. As always, I do want to point out that there are many publications and blogs available for you now up on UBS Online Services, and that does include the publication that Nikki and Jay co-authored that we referenced during our conversation this morning, the title of which is U.S. Energy Industry Consolidation, the start of something big. So for UBS clients, be sure to reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of that publication directly, though as I mentioned, the publication can also be located now up on UBS Online Services. Top of the Morning will be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.